He is asked by his father, Yamaraj. Yamaraj is the god of death and he is also the father of Yudhishthir. So he asks Yudhishthir that, my dear son, what is the most wonderful thing in the whole world? And Yudhishthir, he looks at his father and he says, Ahani ahani bhutani gachantiya yamalayam shesha sthavaram ichanti kim acharyam ata param. He says that everywhere, all around us, all the time, we are seeing living entities dying. Wherever we look, we see people dying. Not only people, we see animals dying, we see insects dying, we see plants dying, we see everything that is born dying. Yet he says that although the living entity sees everybody dying around him, he himself feels that he is going to live forever. In fact, it was, I think, the famous American humorist Mark Twain who said that, I always knew that death was inevitable, but I thought that in my case an exception would be made. So that is the belief of every living entity. In fact, I remember some time back when I had gone to receive my vaccination against hepatitis B in the preventive and social medicine department of the JJ Hospital, I saw a very interesting sight. And what was that interesting sight? I saw a group of children who had been brought there to be given vaccination. All young children, must have been about 4 or 5 years old, not older than that. When they were giving the first child the vaccination, there was absolute pandemonium. Because the minute the child realized that he was going to be given an injection, he started screaming and shouting and trying to run away. So in fact, it took 2 ward boys, 1 nurse, 1 intern to hold that boy down. And in addition to that, it required 2 doctors to hold him steady while the injection was given. And all the time he kept trying to struggle, he tried to kick, he tried to shout, he tried to yell, he did everything possible. And everybody was terrified that while giving the injection, the needle might break. So it took so many people to hold him down to see that they gave him the injection without any problem. Now what I found interesting about the whole thing was that I found the reaction of the other children very interesting. What is the reaction of the other children? Some of them, they just looked at him, pointed, and they started laughing. All of them pointed and started laughing. Some of them were just looking curiously, what is going on? Why is he struggling like this? And still a few of the other children who had come in this group were just playing by themselves without paying much attention to what was going on. So after the first child was given the vaccination, they then picked up the second child. And again the second child, when he realized that he was going to be given the injection, he also started shouting and screaming and yelling and kicking, and it took the same number of people to hold him down while the injection was being given. You would have thought that the other children by now would have become wise. But no. In fact, they continued doing exactly what they had done when the first child was given the injection. Some of them pointed and started laughing amongst themselves. Some of them just watched curiously. Others started playing amongst themselves. And this went on till practically the last child was given the injection. So it just struck me that how peculiar. They are seeing themselves one by one picked up and being given the injection, and yet all the time each of them imagines and feels that he is not going to get the injection. It's all meant for somebody else. And in fact, this is the same reaction that all living entities have towards death. All of us are not strangers to death, because we must have seen death at some time or the other. Of course, I am a surgeon, so I have seen death in so many forms. But even those of you who are not in the medical profession must have seen death at some time or the other. You might have seen friends, you might have seen relatives, you might have seen acquaintances. Even those of you who have not had a death amongst your relatives, if you passed by Marine Drive, you would have seen bodies of fishermen washed up. In fact, just in the morning while passing by, I saw them collecting a bloated body of a fisherman which was picked up from there. So nobody is a stranger to death. Yet, everybody imagines that death will come a long way off, so we need not worry. In fact, I remember that from JJ Hospital, when I used to go home, I used to pass through that area of town where the maximum number of meat-eating restaurants are situated on one road, Smolana Shaukat Ali Road. And on that road, the scene to watch was really on Bakri Eid Day. Because what used to happen on Bakri Eid Day? On Bakri Eid Day, the goats used to be kept tethered outside. And then they used to be slaughtered. Now the peculiarity about this was that just as the goats were being slaughtered, the other goats who were tethered there never paid much attention to what was going on. They would see their fellow goat being slaughtered and being hung up on hooks, but they themselves were happily munching grass, or a male goat was trying to mount a female goat and kept constantly engaged in activities other than thinking of what was approaching them in the near future. So human beings are like these goats, and our day must also come. Just like on Bakrid, the goat's day must come when his throat is slaughtered, so also our day must come when we will also be subject to death. Yet strangely, nobody seems to wonder or think that it will approach him, because after all, who knows when death will come? It's a very important question. Why? Because one of the first courses that was held here was not conducted by me, it was conducted by somebody else. At that time I recommended to a medical student who was known to me that please attend the course. So this medical student attended the course for 2 days. On the second day, this medical student said that I'm not interested in attending the whole course, because after all, what's the use of thinking about all these things? I am still young. I have got so many years of life to go. And being so young, what's the point in getting involved in all this thing just now? Maybe in my old age I'll think about it. The same medical student died in the plane crash which resulted from the explosion over Ireland, when this medical student was flying to New York. And that medical student died. So what do we mean by old? By old we mean one who is just preceding, who has death very close to him. So you can understand that what do we mean by old? A 70-year-old man who has got 10 years more of life is still young. But a 3-month-old child who is going to die tomorrow is already old. So what do we mean by old? By old we mean one who has death staring at him in the face. It's not chronological years. It is how close you are to death. In actual fact, who in this room can say that he is going to live till tomorrow? Nobody knows. In fact, I said that yesterday, that I hope that you will all be here to hear the lecture on death tomorrow. Because even tomorrow might be too late for some of you. And of course, many people laughed. They thought I was cracking a joke. But I still see there are many missing faces in the audience. So I hope seriously that nothing has really happened to them. So my request to you is that please take this lecture seriously. Because in fact it has been said, there is nothing that is inevitable but death. In fact there is a very important saying in the English language which means as sure as death. In fact even in the Bhagavad Gita, what does Krishna say? In the Bhagavad Gita Krishna says that for one who is born, death is certain. Just like for one who dies, birth is certain. Therefore he says that one should not grieve. But simultaneously Krishna says that you must learn and you must prepare to face death. Actually you can compare death to, in fact you can compare life and death to sitting in a cinema theater. Just imagine yourself sitting in a cinema theater. And when you are sitting in a cinema theater, you booked your ticket, the doors are closed, the hall is dark, it's an air conditioned room, and you can't get up from your seat without tripping over half a dozen people. And you have no control over the program that is being shown on the movie screen. So since you have no control over what is being shown on the movie screen, you might have entered the cinema theater because you wanted a romance, a romantic film. But now you see that the movie is all about Count Dracula. So you are seeing a horror film. But you have no choice. You have to sit through the whole film. In fact, life is like that. Because what is happening in life does not actually affect the spirit soul. The spirit soul in actual fact is simply a witness. He is watching everything in life just like it's a movie show. In fact, just like when something happens on the movie screen, you see a whole row of people crying, or when something funny happens, people laugh. I remember at one time my mother went to see the famous movie, Love Story. So she said, no, it wasn't a good movie. I said, why? She said, I took 3 handkerchiefs to the movie and I wet only one. So people go to movies simply to shed tears and to be affected by what goes on the screen. But in actual fact, what is going on the screen has got no connection with you. So also the spirit soul, he watches his own life and he sees life all around him. And he is affected as if it's genuinely affecting him. But actually, as I pointed out on the third day, the spirit soul is completely unaffected. na jayate mriyate va kadachin nayam bhutva bhavita vana bhuya ajo shashvato yam purano na hanyate hanyamane sharire. For the soul is neither birth nor death, nor having once been does he ever cease to be. Unborn, undying, primeval, even he is not slain when the body is slain. But still the spirit soul, because he is covered by ignorance, is affected by what happens in life. So also when you are watching the cinema screen, you are affected actually. It's just a bunch of pictures of celluloid which is being shown on the screen rapidly and there's a little sound being accompanying it. But you are being affected nevertheless. So your life is like that, and you are sitting in the cinema theater, you are watching your life being shown on the screen. And sometimes you are touched by some tragic event in your life and you shed tears. And sometimes you are amused and you laugh. But this is just a film show that's being shown. But one point I would like to make about this film show analogy. That point is, when the cinema show gets over, you have a choice. You can get up and walk out of that hall. When the cinema show gets over, you can get up and you can walk out of that hall. If you are so stupid as to continue sitting in the hall by purchasing another ticket, then you have to sit through one more show. So death is like that. Death is learning to get up and walk out of the cinema hall once and for all. Never more having to sit through a show which you have no control over. Never more sitting through a show which affects you, although it should not affect you. So that is death. In fact, in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says that Dehino smin yatha dehe kaumaram yavanam jara tatha dehantara praptir dhiras tatana moyati. Actually, you are changing bodies even now. Just like you change your body from the young baby to a young child to a young man to an old man, so also at the point of death you must change this body and take on a new one. I pointed out to you in the third lecture, that all of you are changing bodies every 7 years. Every 7 years, every single cell in your body is changed. So you are today sitting in that chair, something completely different from what you were 7 years ago, regardless of your age. So you are changing bodies even now. But at the point of death, you cast off the body completely. You don't change that body while you are still in it. But you cast off this body and you take on a new one. And Krishna says in the second chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Vasaunshi jirnanya yatha vihai, navani grinati naroparani, tatha sharirani vihai jirnanya, anyani saunyati navani dehi. But just like when you go home, you will take off your clothes and you will put on new clothes which are clean and fresh. So also at the point of death, you will cast off this body just like old worn out clothes and you will put on new clothes. This is the definition of death. And what do you take with you when you shift your body? That is also mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Shariram yat avapnoti yat chapya utkramati ishvara grihit vaitani samyati vayur gandhani vashaya. That you cast off this body and you go on to a new one. But what do you take with you? You take with you your impressions of this life. Not necessarily your memories. But you carry with you your impressions and conceptions of this life. Just like the wind carries a fragrance from a flower. But when one dies, it is indeed a very traumatic experience for one who is not prepared for death. It's a horrible experience to be removed from this body to which you have been attached and which you have been remaining in for so many years. To be removed from this body and go to a new one is one of the most traumatic events in everybody's life. In fact, I have a friend who, after reading a little bit about spiritual life, came to me and said, he says, is it true, he said, that I heard that death is like being bitten by 1,000 scorpions? So I looked at him and said, no, that's not true. He said, great. I said, no, according to the Garuda Puran, it's like being bitten by 42,000 scorpions. This is the definition of the scripture, that this is how painful death is. No wonder that when death is so painful and so traumatic, we cannot remember the events of the last life. In fact, when I was working in the emergency room of JJ Hospital, I remember we used to get people with head injuries. They used to get slight taps on the head, a slight bump on the head. But they used to often lose their memory for the incident that had taken place. It's known as post-traumatic amnesia. Of course, sometimes amnesia can be very impressive, In fact, whole lot of Mills and Boons novels and romantic films have been made on how some beautiful girl loses her memory and then she takes up with a new boyfriend and starts a new life. So there are many movies like that. But the point is that if a slight tap on your head can make you lose your memory, can you imagine what happens to your memory for events when you are literally pulled out of this material body and you have to abandon this body for once and for all? So actually death can be a very traumatic event if you are not prepared for it. And it is very important to know how to face death. Because if you know how to face death, you will learn how to tolerate what happens at the point of death. Also, you will learn the most important thing. And what is the most important thing? You will learn how not to come back. Therefore, Krishna says again and again in the Bhagavad Gita, he says, Janma Mrityu Jara Vyadi Dukha Dosha Anudarshanam. He says, look around you, look at birth, death, old age, disease, unhappiness, misfortune, fault. When you see these things, you will become more aware of spiritual life. And you will be convinced that you should not come back. In fact, coming back is a dreadful thing. And nobody, and I firmly must request all of you in this room, that make it a point that after you attended this lecture, take what I said seriously and make sure that you don't come back. Because if you come back, you have lost your one chance of being eternally liberated from the cycle of birth and death. Now, what does the scripture say about how you should be liberated from the cycle of birth and death? So please pay clear attention to what I'm saying. These details about how to escape the cycle of birth and death have been mentioned in the Chandogya Upanishad. And also they have been repeated by Lord Krishna in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita. Now the following points have to be remembered. If you want to escape the cycle of birth and death and make sure you don't come back into this world is called Dukha Alayam Ashashvatam. This is a place of misery where everything is temporary. Krishna also repeats it by saying it is Anityam Asukham Lokam. That means this is a place where nothing is permanent and where there is no happiness. So you have to remember the following points. First and foremost, you must make sure that you die when the sun is in the northern hemisphere. Of course, I mentioned Jan 1st there, but it should be Jan 14th. So between Jan 14th and June 14th, you must plan your death. If you die after June 14th and before Jan 14th, bad luck, you've got a round trip ticket. That means you go there and come back. Where you go, that's another point. We'll discuss that later. But if you cannot arrange your death between Jan 14th and June 14th, back you come. Second point. If you should somehow manage, contrive and see that you do die between Jan 14th and June 14th, that is when the sun is in the northern hemisphere, make sure that you die during the period of the waxing moon. Because if you should die when the moon is waning, then sorry friends, you have to come back again. Even if you manage, number one point, if you manage to die between Jan 14th and June 14th, and somehow or the other you die on the first day of the waning moon, you come back. Back again into the cycle of birth and death. That's what happens to you. Now furthermore, not only should you die between Jan 14th and June 14th, not only should you die during the period of the waxing moon, but also be very careful to see that you must die during the daytime. It's called during the period of the fire. The sacrificial fire is lit in the daytime. The Grihastha lights the sacrificial fire at dawn and at dusk. So in the daytime you must die. Not at the time of the smoke, that is not at night. You can't afford to die at night. Because you may be so keen on seeing the moon that it is waxing and not waning, that you might wait for night time and be sure that the moon is waxing. But if you do something like that and the sun has set when you die, bad luck. You come back again. So please pay attention to the points. First of all, die between Jan 14th and June 14th. After June 14th, bad luck. Then you have to die during the period of the waxing moon, not during the waning moon. Also, when your mind is so fixed on the moon, make sure that you die during the daytime. Because if you die during the night, again you have to come back. That's not all, friends. There's still more to come. Furthermore, you have to learn to die with a specific yogic posture. What do you mean by specific yogic posture? That yogic posture is such that the heel of your foot must be pressed against your anus, and all the 9 orifices in your body must be closed. So this specific yogic posture, you must contort your body into that particular yogic posture which is designed for learning to face death. And after you have done that, you must concentrate your mind on your heart, you must concentrate your life air on the top of the head, and furthermore, make sure that at the point of death you are chanting Om. Can we go back again so that everyone will get the points clearly? First of all, remember, die between Jan 14th and June 14th. Secondly, you must die during the period of the waxing moon. Thirdly, death must occur during the daytime, not during the night time. If you have somehow managed to arrange your death within Jan 14th and June 14th, in the period of the waxing moon, during the daytime, you have to adopt a specific yogic posture. You must also concentrate your mind on the heart, your life air must be concentrated on the top of your head, and you must be chanting Om at the point of death. So at least these 7 points must be strictly adhered to. There are many more points, but these are the main 7 points that you must adhere to if you want to leave this body and not return again into the cycle of birth and death. So I mean, it's fairly clear to all of you now what you must do to avoid coming back into the cycle of birth and death. But I don't see many happy faces. I don't think people are very optimistic about meeting all the 7 conditions perfectly. Well, I don't blame you. In fact, Krishna has another way out. So those of you who are discouraged by seeing all these 7 points, then you must relax. Because if you can't fulfill these 7 points, then we have to learn what Krishna offers as an alternative to this. Krishna says in the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita that my devotees are never bewildered by seeing all this. By hearing all this, my devotees are never bewildered. Because these devotees are guaranteed to escape the cycle of birth and death. And how are devotees guaranteed to escape the cycle of birth and death? In the 8th chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says very clearly. He says, Yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tyajeti antya kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sada tad bhava bhavita. He says, whatever you shall think of at the point of death, that is what you shall attain. He is very clear on this point. He says that at the point of death, at the very instant of death, whatever you are thinking of, that you shall obtain. Please remember this point. Because even if you are coming back, be sure you think of the right thing. Don't be like Maharaj Bharat. You know the story of Maharaj Bharat? It's an interesting story that's in the Bhagavad Puran. Maharaj Bharat was the king of India. In fact, India has been named after Maharaj Bharat. Why do we call India Bharat? Because it's been named after Maharaj Bharat. And this Maharaj Bharat was the son of Rishabdev. Who is Rishabdev? Rishabdev is the incarnation of Krishna, who was the founder of the Jain religion. And what did Rishabdev tell all his sons? Rishabdev taught his sons all about spiritual life. What did he say? He says, Nayam deho deha bhajam na loke kashtan kaman arhate vidbhujam ye tapo divyam putraka yena satram shudhiyed yasmad brahma saukhyam tva anantam. He says, my dear sons, do not waste your time running after temporary pleasures of the senses which are available even to dogs and to hogs who are eating stool. Instead, he said, engage in austerities and come on the platform of spiritual life, whereby you will know spiritual happiness, Brahma Saukhyam, which is Swa Anantam, which is endless. Don't chase temporary pleasures of the senses which have a beginning and an end and which are available even to dogs and hogs who eat stool. Instead, you indulge in austerities by which you come to the platform of spiritual life. And by coming to the platform of spiritual life, you will know spiritual happiness which is endless. So such a father he had. And being well taught by his father, Maharaj Bharat, at a point of time came in his life when he left his entire kingdom, that is the whole of India. He was the ruler of India, yet he gave up the kingdom of India. He gave up his beautiful wife, he gave up his wonderful children, he gave up his beautiful treasury, his army, his courtiers, his court, his subjects. and he got up and went away from there. And the Bhagavatam is described that all glory to Maharaj Bharat, who left his wife, his children, his family, his kingdom, his army, just like a man who gets up and walks away after passing stool. When you get up, when you pass stool, nobody turns around and starts picking at it and looking at it and longingly leaving it reluctantly. You just get up and walk away. So also Maharaj Bharat, he walked away from all the wonderful things in his life just like a man who passes stool walks away from what he has passed. And Maharaj Bharat then went to a holy place, and by the bank of a holy river he performed austerities and began spiritual practices. This is the caliber of Maharaj Bharat. Just want to give you a background of what a great soul he was. And Maharaj Bharat, after doing all this, was engaged in spiritual practices so that he could eventually come to the platform of unending spiritual happiness. But one day, while he was engaged in meditation, he heard the roar of a lion. And he saw a most strange thing. On one bank of the river, on the opposite bank of the river, there was a lion which was roaring. And there was a pregnant deer in the river which was trying to cross. And being terrified to death by the roar of the lion, the deer gave up its life then and there in the midstream. And while it died, simultaneously it gave birth to a small fawn. So imagine the position of the fawn. Newborn. Newborn where? In the center of the river. With the lion roaring on one side, the mother dead in the stream. So Maharaj Bharat, being naturally kind-hearted, he immediately dropped what he was doing and he jumped into the river and he rescued that fawn and brought it to the ashram where he was staying. All alone. He was staying there all alone. And he looked after that fawn as if it was his own child. He protected it from other animals. When he left the place that he was staying, his ashram, he carried that deer along with him. He fed it lovingly. He looked after it, and the fawn became attached to him just as if he was a mother and father combined, because after all it had never seen its mother. When he was engaged in meditation, the fawn would come and would lick the back of his ear and nuzzle him and would distract him. And sure enough, he would pet and fondle the deer. And gradually, more and more time was spent in the service of the deer and less time was spent in spiritual practice, until a point of time came when all his time was devoted to the deer and he had stopped performing spiritual practices altogether. So when he had completely ceased all spiritual practice and he was constantly engaged in looking after, protecting, feeding and grooming the deer, one day the deer happened to leave his ashram without him, and he was obsessed with anxiety that a wild animal like a lion or a tiger might pick up that deer and kill it. So overcome with anxiety for the welfare of the deer, he rushed to the forest here and there looking for the deer. And in his anxiety, he came to a cliff, and without seeing where he was going, he fell over the cliff and he lay at the bottom of the cliff about to die. At that point of time, when he was about to die, he looked and opened his eyes and he saw that beautiful deer which he had looked after all its life now came and was sitting right in front of him and looking at him most sorrowfully and lovingly. So while he looked at it most sorrowfully and lovingly, just at that point of time he left the body. And as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, that yam yam vapi smaran bhavam tajeti ante kalevaram tam tam evaiti kaunteya sadatat bhava bhavita. That whatever you think of at the point of death, that you shall attain. And what did he attain? He attained the body of a deer. Maharaj Bharat, who gave up everything to engage in spiritual practices and to attain the perfection of spiritual life, attained the body of a deer. And it took him some more time before he was reborn again into circumstances where he could make spiritual progress to get out of the cycle of birth and death. So very, very important point is, what are you thinking of at the point of death? That is what you shall attain. Are you thinking of your husband or your wife or your child? Or God forbid, are you thinking of your pet dog? It's not very strange. Actually, you see so many old people living alone. What do they have? They've got a young dog and they keep looking after and petting and coddling. They may meet the same fate as Maharaj Bharat, only not as a deer but as a dog. This is very important because you must understand the science of spiritual life. If you don't understand the science of spiritual life, you will get burned. See, as I pointed out earlier, ignorance is no excuse. If a child puts his hand in fire, the fire will burn the child nevertheless. So also, one who doesn't understand the science of self-realization is asking to be burned. So this is a very important point, that whatever you think of at the point of death, that is what you shall obtain. So also Krishna says, that those who think of me at the point of death, they shall attain me. This is what Krishna promises in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that bhaktya mam abhijanati yavan yashashmi tatvata tato mam tatvato jnatva visate tadanantaram. That I can be known as I am only by pure devotional service, by bhakti. And one who knows me as I am at the point of death shall enter into my eternal kingdom from where there is no return. This is what Krishna promises. He says that ante kale chamam eva smaran muktva kalevaram yaha prayati samadbhavam yati nasya atra asamshaya. That whosoever shall think of me at the point of death, he shall attain me. Of course, if you have been worshipping somebody else, you will attain that person. It's not that you can buy a ticket to Tokyo and land up in New York. If you buy a ticket to Tokyo, you go to Tokyo. If you buy a ticket to New York, you land up in New York. If you buy a ticket to London, you land up in London. Krishna says that in the Bhagavad Gita. He says, Yanti Deva Vrata Devan. Those who worship the demigods, go to the demigods. Pitran Yanti Pitra Vrata. If you've been thinking of your ancestors, you go to the planet where your ancestors dwell. Bhutani Yanti Bhutejya. Those who have been worshipping ghosts and spirits, they go to the planets of the ghosts and spirits. Yanti Madhyajino Api Mam. And those who worship me, they come to me. And further clearly he says, that don't think that if you go to the demigods, if you go to the ancestors, if you go to any other place, you will simply live just like you will live with Krishna. It's not like that. Krishna says clearly, he says, Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjuna. Abrahma Bhuvana Loka Punaravartino Arjuna. From all the planets, right from Brahmalok downwards, you will come back. Mam upetya tu kaunteya punarjanmana vidyate. But one who comes to me, he doesn't come back again to this world of birth and death. So wherever else you may go, you have to come back. Even if you've been worshipping the greatest of the demigods, this is mentioned in the Bhagavad Gita. He says that tetam bhuktva swarga lokam vishalam kshine punyam marti lokam vishanti. He says you will enjoy. If you've been worshipping one of the demigods, you will go to the planet of the demigods, you will enjoy there, no doubt. But tetam bhuktva swarga lokam vishalam, after you have enjoyed in swarga lok, after you have enjoyed in that heavenly planet, kshine punyam marti lokam vishanti, again you'll have to come back. So it's very important that you have to think of Krishna at the point of death. When Krishna says very clearly that if you think of me, you shall come to me, he is talking about Krishna. If you think about any other demigod or anybody else, you go to that planet. And after you've enjoyed, you come back again. This is what the Bhagavad Gita states. Now what is the best way of remembering Krishna at the point of death? The best way of remembering Krishna at the point of death is to chant his holy name. Therefore it has been said that by chanting the holy name of the Lord, one is automatically protected from hellish life, and at the same time one is able to remember the Lord. And to illustrate this point, there is a wonderful story of Ajamil, which is mentioned not only in the Srimad Bhagavatam, but it's mentioned in several other Padma Puran and so many other Puranas. And what is the story of Ajamil? Ajamil was a very pious, saintly Brahmana boy. He looked after his parents. He had a family which he looked after, a wife and child. But one day Ajamil was attracted to a prostitute. And being attracted to the prostitute, initially he took her as a maid servant in his house. And eventually he went off to live with her, abandoning his parents, his wife, his child, and he began to live permanently with that prostitute. By living with her, he had children by her. And to maintain her, he performed all kinds of sinful activities. What kind of sinful activities did he perform? He became a robber, he became a thug, he became a cheat, he became a gambler. And all sinful activities that you could imagine, he indulged in simply to maintain her. So, originally a devotee of God, but he in fact indulged in all sinful activities simply because of his attraction to a prostitute. However, towards the end of his life, in the twilight years of his life, he conceived in the womb of this prostitute a son who was called Narayan. And when this young child was born, Ajamil became very attached to him. Because of course, Ajamil was like a grandfather at that point of time. And that child, although it was his own son, was as young as a grandson should have been. And he was indeed very greatly attached to the child Narayan. And wherever that child would be, he would be with the child. He would always be remembering the child, playing with the child. And when the point of death came, Ajamil was about to leave his body. And when Ajamil was about to leave his body, the Yamadoots came for him. I don't know if you've seen any picture of Yamadoots. It's a beautiful picture in the Srimad Bhagavatam about the Yamadoots. It shows ghastly, misshapen dwarfs with horrible teeth coming out and tangled hair. And they look so brutish and so wicked and so evil that just looking at them inspires fear. Now there will be some among you who will say that, oh, one more mythological story that he's telling us about the Yamadoots. But, in fact, it has been said, I think William Shakespeare has said it, there are more things on heaven and earth than you have dreamed of, Horatio. Just because you have not seen, don't just dismiss it out of mind. Because before I go on to tell you what happened to Ajamil, I'd like to tell you a little more about the Yamadoots, the actual true story. The painting of the Yamadoots pulling Ajamil from his body was actually done by a devotee by the name of Parikshit Das. Parikshit Das was an American devotee who joined this movement, and he painted this picture of the Yamadoots pulling Ajamil out of his body. Now Parikshit Das's father was a red-blooded American. He believed in the stars and stripes, he believed in the American law, and he believed in the gun. He was big, strong, and he feared nobody. He was really a very brave man. And he thought his son was crazy. So he didn't pay much attention to his son's activities. However, when his father, Parikshit Das's son, this big, strong man who believed in the gun, was about to die, Parikshit Das rushed home. But when he reached, his father had already died. So Parikshit Das's mother, also an American lady with no belief in Bhagavatam or Yamadoots or anything, she came to him and she said that, my dear son, for the first time in my life I have been shaken. He said, why? What happened? Why have you been shaken? He said, I have known your father since very young age and I have never seen him frightened or terrified of anything. But I have seen your father dying. And when your father was dying, for the first time in my life, I saw your father overcome with fear. His face was contorted and distorted with fear. And he called for me and he said, get me my gun, get me my gun, get me my gun. And he was looking over my shoulder at something which I could not see. I have never seen your father like this. I have never seen him frightened. But this time I saw him so frightened, so terrified, looking at something which I could not see, and he was saying, get me my gun. Why should a man who's dying ask for his gun, and what did he see that made him so frightened? So Parikshit Das, who was the artist who had made the original painting, showed his mother the original painting of Ajamil being pulled out of the body by the Yamadoots. Instantly the mother accepted everything the son said, and she began chanting the holy name of the Lord from that day on. So, what I'm trying to tell you is that don't dismiss things out of hand, because this is a true story, I'm not making it up. So there are more things on heaven and earth than we have dreamed of. So just listen to me and understand what I am telling you. So the Yamadoots came to drag Ajamil from his body. Of course, Ajamil didn't have a gun in those days. So he couldn't say, get me my gun. But Ajamil was terrified nonetheless. And he was so terrified that the first thing he could think of was his young child who was running around outside. And he shouted for his son, Narayan. And he said, Narayan, Narayan. He chanted the name of the Lord. So at that point of time when he chanted the name of the Lord, instantly the Vishnu Dutas or the messengers of God came and they prevented the Yamadutas from dragging him away. Now this is where the actual scriptural fact often blends into sentiment. Why does it blend into sentiment? Because those of you who may have heard this story before must have been lulled into the belief that, aha, now I know what happens. Now because he chanted the name of the Lord, automatically now he went back to Godhead. That's it. He went back to Godhead. Just by chanting the name of the Lord. But I must disappoint those of you who have been imagining this so far. Because unfortunately, simply by chanting the name of the Lord, you cannot go back to Godhead. Ajamil was given another chance. Ajamil was given another chance. He was allowed to return to his body. And after being allowed to return to his body, Ajamil now went to Haridwar. Abandoning this prostitute and her children, he went to Haridwar. And in Haridwar, even today if you go there, people will show you the remnants of Ajamil's hut. And there Ajamil went and he lived in a Vishnu temple for 12 years. And 12 years he constantly day and night chanted the holy name of the Lord for his purification. And after being purified completely over a 12 year period, eventually he went back to Godhead. So it's important to know that the chanting of the holy name may save you from hell. Because where do the Yamadutas take you? They take you to hell. But by chanting the holy name of the Lord, you cannot go back to Godhead. In fact, it has been said that any devotional service you do saves you from the greatest fear. Therefore, Krishna says that Neha Bikrama Nasho Sri Pratyavayana Vidyate Svalpam Api Asya Dharmasya Trayato Mahato Bhayat. That even a little bit of advancement can save you from the greatest fear. For on this path, there is no loss and no diminution. And what is the greatest fear? The greatest fear is being dragged to hell. That is the greatest fear. In fact, in the Mohamudgara Sotra, Adi Shankara also says that Bhagavad Gita Kinchita Dita Ganga Jal Lava Kanika Pita Sakriyadapi Murari Samarcha Kriyate Tasya Yamena Na Charcha. He says, one who has read Bhagavad Gita even a little bit, one who has tasted a little bit of Ganges water, one who has surrendered to Lord Krishna even once in his life, such a person has no argument with the Lord of Death. He has no argument with the Lord of Death. That means he doesn't have to go to hell. But that does not save him from coming back again into this cycle of birth and death. Because only one who is perfect can enter into perfection.